Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Bill Lofelm, whose new Maureen Coughlan novel is The Devil's Muse. We'll also hear from Emma Fick, who has created the very charming book, Snippets of New Orleans. It's summertime, and you know what that means? Another novel from crime writer Bill Lofelm. If you've been following his series featuring rookie cop Maureen Coughlan, you know that the last novel, Let the Devil Out, ended with the promise of a Mardi Gras story. And now in The Devil's Muse, he delivers with a novel set on the Thursday before Mardi Gras. Bill Lofelm, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Well, thank you for having me, Susan.
So finally, you're ready to write about Mardi Gras, and Maureen's ready to hit the streets.
Yes.
And you chose a very deliberate time frame for this novel.
I did. Originally, it was going to be like a big, expansive, all-inclusive, and it was going to start with Muses, and it was going to end with St. Anne's, and it was going to go all over the city. And then I realized, especially when you have to think about what it takes to explain Mardi Gras to people who don't know it or only know it from like Cops and Girls Gone Wild and that kind of stuff, I realized that would be like a 1,200-page novel. So I decided to just do the opposite,
right,
which was shrink it. And so I decided it would be in one night.
I know. That's very impressive. So read a little bit for us and set the scene.
It's the start of the Thursday night parades, and Maureen is working the route. It's her first Mardi Gras. It's not her first parade. She's done a couple of the day parades, and this is going to be her first experience with one of the big, like, super crews. You know, I think at this point, Muses is a super crew. So you see the energy level climb and climb and climb, you know, as you get to Muses. So I wanted to take her through that experience. And I picked Thursday. I picked the Muses parade because I liked the idea of running Maureen through the big women's crew. And if you look over the course of the book, she meets 9 different women.
Excellent.
So this is the beginning. On a misty Thursday night in New Orleans, Officer Maureen Coughlan stood in the middle of St. Charles Avenue, surrounded by fire. Flames danced around her, throwing their fluid light against the steady darkness, igniting wavy golden glows on the hundreds of damp and screaming faces surrounding her and on the fluttering leaves of the ancient trees forming the canopy that yawned above her. The heat of the passing flames reddened her cheeks. She felt their warmth on her bare throat and found it soothing. She breathed in the black smoke. A light sweat broke across her hairline under her knit NOPD cap. She'd been cold for so long before the fire came that she sniffled despite the heat, and the tang of burning fuel stung her nostrils. She felt, for a moment, transported into a ghost story, one where she was the ghost, a blue specter floating weightless in a haunted Victorian parlor, with shades, spirits, and banshees suspended in the night air everywhere around her like smoke from the fires, drifting to her like the heavy vapor of spilled propane. Despite the march of the flames, she stayed unmoving in the street, her hands clasped behind her back, her feet spread on the pavement. She curled her toes, gripping the soles of her shoes, grounding herself on the avenue. Masked men danced around her on all sides. They carried the fire. They wore their knit hats and ball caps pulled low. Bandanas and towels covered their faces, only their glowing eyes and shining cheeks exposed. They waved and spun their burning torches in the night air above their heads, strutting, leaping, dancing, dipping their hips, arching their backs as they broke around her, a fluid, flaming wave breaking against the dark, damp rock. Thick drops of fire, like huge burning tears, tumbled from the torches, falling onto the damp street where they sputtered and died. The people lining the street tossed sprays of coins at the firebearers, the flying money flickering like sparks in the light of the flames, the coins pinging and banging off the metal guards of the torches like baby gunshots. The men with the torches dipped and whirled, peeling the coins off the street with the long fingers of one hand, twirling their torches in the other. They did this, these men, Maureen thought, for miles. She searched her brain for what they were called. One word, a French word, a New Orleans word one of her fellow cops had taught her as the other officers in the 6th District tried to educate her in time for working her first Mardi Gras. She found it, flambeau. That was it. That's the word. The men who marched with fire to light the parade were called the flambeau. This was her first night parade that used them. The flambeau were a superfluous, beloved tradition held over from the holiday's 19th century roots, from when mule-drawn carts pulled the parade floats through the gaslit streets. She was proud of herself for remembering this detail. She had plenty left to learn, that was for sure, but she was making progress. A tricky city, New Orleans, and she made you earn access to her intimacies.
So, she's learning.
Yes, yes, she is. Still learning. I mean, I've been here 20 years and I'm still learning.
Aren't we all? Yeah. I mean, now, there are so many interesting things to talk about with this book. And it's almost as if you set yourself certain formal challenges. It's like compressing that time frame into the space of one single parade. That was an incredibly smart decision.
Thank you.
Don't you think?
It was. I just picked one to be representative of the whole. I think, you know, authors do that all the time with characters.
One of the things I love about this book is the precision with which you map neighborhoods and the emotional rhythms of the crowds as the parade passes. And you work really hard to make individuals stand out against the crowd. But the crowd is a character.
One of my inspirations for finally writing about Mardi Gras after feeling like I shouldn't do it for a long time because it's been done was just the crowd and the route. You know, I live in the infamous box in the Garden District, and I've spent a lot of time on the parade routes. I still love the Mardi Gras parades, and the way the crowd functions is just amazing to me. It's an amazing example of people sharing a public space in ways that I don't think you see anywhere else in the country. And so I just wanted to see if I could capture that. A few years ago, I read E.L. Doctorow's The March, and he talks about a marching army as a living organism. And that just always stuck with me when I was out on the parade route. I'm like, this is kind of the same thing. And so I just wanted to explore that and write about that. And I felt like it's a party Mardi Gras that you don't hear about.
Now, Maureen is up against some, you know, real life occupational challenges in this book. And first off is that thing we all dread and worry about, a shooting at a parade. So what was it like for you to recreate that?
Fortunately, I don't have personal experience with being around for that. But, you know, I've been around enough so that I know it happens almost every year now, which is really unfortunate. You know, one of the things I noticed a long time ago is you can have a shooting right on the route and the parade keeps rolling.
Right.
And somehow they have managed to never spiral completely out of control. And I was always curious about how that was possible and why that happened. And I just felt it was such a unique environment to try and deal with an emergency. So I wanted to see what that was like.
And adding to the pressure of everything that's going on, there's this internet news crew following the cops around and trying to capture the city under stress, as it were.
Yeah, I was able to look at a couple different things with that news crew, kind of fly-by-night YouTube channel news crew, and just the presence of social media, the scrutiny that police come under, the ability to manipulate information any way you want and put it out into the world for who knows how many people.
Instantly.
And it let me look into the whole authenticity argument just a little bit that goes on in New Orleans now. And a friend of mine, I think she came up with the expression nolier than thou. There's this debate about what's authentic, what's the real New Orleans and what's not the real New Orleans. And so this producer comes from out of town to capture the real New Orleans and really has no idea what she's doing or what she's looking for. And her assumption is that the first act of violence that she runs into is, that's the authentic New Orleans. And I wanted to challenge that opinion that I think people have.
Well, and it's so interesting because it's such a mirror of how we react to that now, that sense of being observed and being part of the story. And it's just a curious phenomenon. I love the way everybody says, the TV crew. And she goes, we're with the internet. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah, because that's the new know, TV, so old school and useless. You know, we're on the cutting edge of technology, or so they think.
And beyond that, you talk about a possible new drug threat to the city in all this that adds a layer of suspense.
That's actually a real thing.
Yes. This
Flacca drug that is really, it's like synthetic marijuana on steroids. It just makes people crazy and suicidal, homicidal, and it's kind of creeping around the Gulf South under the radar a little bit. I don't even remember how I came across it. And so it just seemed something worth talking about.
Yeah. And what's one thing you could throw into the mix of Mardi Gras to complicate things?
Get some kind of new drug scourge.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. So what was the biggest challenge for you in writing this book? Because it's very precise. I mean, you could walk it off. I mean, you know what I mean?
I did.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I walked it off. I spent even more time that Mardi Gras on the parade route than ever. And especially in the streets and the neighborhoods around the route. So not just on St. Charles, but back in the neighborhoods, back in Central City. And I walked everywhere that something happens in that novel. I went, if not during Muses, during one of the major parades, just to look and listen and see what was going on. And
so what was the hardest thing about this?
The number of characters.
It's a lot. Yeah.
That was a specific challenge that I set for myself. I always have trouble moving actors around the set.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to have a book with a lot of characters, a lot of moving parts. So there are scenes where you have four or five characters moving around, talking, joking, wisecracking, trying to deliver information, you know, talking and acting at cross purposes. And I actually watched a lot of the animated series Archer.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever watched that?
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And the dialogue is so rapid fire and constructed in such a way that there's three, four, five different jokes and conversations going on in any different scene. So I kind of studied that and tried to use that for some of the dialogue. So handling, you know, Maureen is hardly ever the only cop on the scene. So there are multiple cops, and here comes the news crew, and then there's the people in the neighborhood, and all this is going on, and making all that function competently and hopefully be funny. And some, I tried to put more humor in this novel too. So that was really the biggest, that was the hardest thing for me to accomplish.
Yeah. What I love is that you do get those little pockets, like the people in the bar. The bartender, you know, is such a great character. And then there are the victims outside the bar and what heartbreak is there. And then there are the cops who are under all this stress and are overworked. I mean, you really bring home the pressure of being a cop at Mardi Gras.
I did. I was fortunate enough to sit with an officer for like two and a half hours one afternoon and have him walk me through, you know, as much of the experience as we could get around. Well, one of the things he impressed upon me is just, there are not enough cops to police that route.
Yeah.
There aren't. And just the sheer number of people that are out and what's going on. And so the level of sensitivity to their surroundings that they have to have and the amount of pressure that they're under. And for all the problems with the New Orleans Police Department, somehow they seem to be really good at that. And that was just really fascinating to me.
It's an amazing thing what they managed to pull off in a carnival season, just keeping so many people safe.
It is. So I asked him for general information, and then I kind of ran some of the scenarios in the book by him, and he just said basically, he's like, as long as it's crazy, it's plausible.
Well, that's words to live by.
Right.
I love the way you have, you know, that epigraph from Oasis, I carry a madness wherever I go.
Thank
if
you.
If that doesn't describe New Orleans, I don't know what does.
It seemed, I don't think that's what the Gallagher brothers are talking about. I don't think they're talking about Mardi Gras, but it seemed to fit.
Right. Oh, well, it's an unforgettable parade and all the action you could ever want. We've been talking with Bill Lofelm, whose new Maureen Coughlan novel is The Devil's Muse. You can meet him Tuesday, July 11th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Do you know that feeling when you're in a bookstore and a pretty and charming book just seems to leap into your hands? That's how I felt when I saw Emma Fix, Snippets of New Orleans. This book of watercolor and ink drawings of our city captures its fleeting charms, but also something essential about life and place. I can't quit looking at it, so it's a pleasure to welcome Covington native Emma Fick to The Reading Life. You may have seen her work on NOLA.com, and this is her second book after Snippets of Serbia. Emma Fick, I'm so happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Thank you for having me.
So you get your degree in English literature and art history, and you moved to Serbia for a couple of years. Why Serbia?
This is a long story. A lot of my answers, I think, are long stories. But the short answer is that I knew I wanted to live abroad for a year. I didn't have a good grasp of any foreign language, and so I wanted to apply for a Fulbright scholarship, and instead of the language aspect of it, chose to look into the family history aspect of it. And my family was saved during World War II by a Serbian man, and I decided to go there to pay homage to that history and to learn more about it.
Ah, and that's when you discovered your style of investigating place, right?
Yes, the first year I was teaching English in my spare time as a way to come to grips with what I was seeing and hearing and feeling, and also to share it with people back home, I started the illustrations, and I just posted them on a Tumblr, and it took off from there.
Did you have formal drawing training?
I took classes in high school, and I took one drawing class in college. My plan originally was to double major in English literature and art. It was just too time-consuming, and I chose literature because I felt that art was always something I could return to because I felt it was more deeply entrenched in me, and I chose instead to double major in literature and art history. And I think that studying art history prepared me in a way, not a technical way, but in a way of looking at the world.
Right. Art history is invaluable. I kind of think everybody needs to study it.
I agree.
To see better. I mean,
yes.
So then you got a grant from the U.S. Embassy to do Snippets of Serbia. Is that right?
Correct. After I was teaching for a year and doing these illustrations every day and posting them, they took off in the small town where I was living and working called Novi Pazar in Serbia. And I ended up doing a small gallery exhibition at the end of the year. And because Fulbright is affiliated with the embassy, members of the embassy came to look and they liked what I was doing and saw how it was tying together American culture and Serbian culture. And that began a conversation about me returning to Serbia, not to teach English, but to focus specifically on illustration as a way of communicating culture. So I got a 4-month grant to return to Serbia, do workshops with Serbian kids, and to continue my cultural illustrations to culminate in an exhibition in Belgrade, which is the capital of Serbia.
How exciting.
It was.
You're international.
Right.
So what drew you home to New Orleans?
Well, my family. After 2 years in Serbia, I was missing them and I was missing Louisiana and the things that I know. And I figured, why not return and start a new project? And so I left Serbia knowing that when I landed in New Orleans, I would begin on the second book.
So tell us about how you decided to organize this book.
That's a tricky one because I'm always conflicted about how to organize it. It's always tempting to organize it by food, by architecture, by people, and divide it up by subject matter. But actually, I ended up dividing it up by geography mostly, uptown and downtown. And it's the same way I did Serbia. And that way, each page is different. You get a page with a building, a page with a person, then a page with a place. And I think that that mixture is really essential to the concept of snippets and that they're little pieces of things that all added up give you a sense of the city as a whole. So I decided to divide it up in these general categories. There's also Mardi Gras, there's food, and then there's uptown and downtown. And because of these general categories, you get little pieces of a lot of different specific things within those categories.
And you have such a New Orleans sense of humor. I mean, the 7 people you see at Mardi Gras, the 7 people you see at Jazz Fest, all those types that are instantly recognizable to us.
I hope so.
Oh, yes.
I got some help on those. That was a collaboration with NOLA.com. And it was a collaboration shooting ideas back and forth. So I do have some of those people and some of that humor to thank them for.
Well, those are wonderful. One of the things I really love is that in addition to all these wonderful places and food and, you know, other cultural things, you have wonderful portraits of people who make New Orleans what it is. And some of them are very famous.
Yes, probably the most famous one in there is Chef Paul Prudhomme. I feel like New Orleans has a cult of personalities, and people really worship the cultural icons here. So I felt I would be remiss if I didn't include some of them. Like Paul Prudhomme is a chef. I also included some of the famous folk artists here, not portraits of them, but portraits of their art.
Right.
Like Simone and Dr. Bob.
And Louis Armstrong and Marie Laveau. And,
yes, yes.
But also you have some wonderful ordinary New Orleanians, the kinds of people who make life here what it is. Like there's one user of the Rosa Keller Library that I particularly like.
Right, right. Miss Annette, she's wonderful. That gets to the core of the concept of the Snippets Project in that it combines the grandiose and the mundane in one place because when I think about New Orleans, or when I think about any place, I mean, this is just kind of a way of approaching the world in general, you have to layer all of these planes of understanding on top of each other. So you have the wars, you have the celebrations, you have the famous people, and then just walking around, you're thinking, oh, this building used to be this. But then in that moment, you don't see the famous or the grandiose. You see the man sitting in front of it drinking his coffee in that moment. So when you're flipping through this book and you're looking at different snippets, my hope is that you do layer Louis Armstrong on top of a woman who's using a library and understand that both of these make up the city.
And you pay tribute to the kinds of people who add to our quality of life here, like that wonderful biscuit maker.
Right, yes, at Mother's. I do try to pay tribute to people behind the scenes, the people that aren't always visible. When we eat that biscuit, we might just be thinking about how delicious the biscuit is, but there's someone who's back there making it with his or her own hands. And in the case of Doug, the biscuit maker, he's been making them for years, and he is the secret ingredient. And these people who make the New Orleans machinery work, even though we don't see them, they're so important. So I tried to draw some of them out of the woodwork and give them the spotlight that they deserve.
And you're not afraid to be serious, too. I mean, there's a wonderful drawing of the Monument to Vera, the Katrina victim that we all know about and remember. And that's a lovely moment in which you kind of urge people to pause and reflect.
I do. I do try to make history accessible, even the parts that aren't perhaps palatable or that we perhaps don't want to think about because they're painful. So the Monument to Vera was one of those. I also did an illustration of the slave exchange in the quarter, which is not marked and which is often passed by. But I do think that these very serious and troubling parts of our history need to be represented.
So what's it like for you now to look at your vision of the city in a book?
It's strange because, you know, creating is a very alive, ever-moving, ever-growing thing. And so to see it now set in stone is a little bit bizarre because I don't feel like, oh, this is the final product. This is finished. All I think about when I'm walking around is the things that were left out, how many more buildings and people and foods there are left to illustrate. So to see something frozen in time, of course, I'm very proud of it. I love that it's out in the world and able to be enjoyed. But there is a kind of strange feeling to see it frozen instead of growing.
So will there be more snippets of New Orleans, or do you think you'll move on to a new place?
I will be moving on to a new place. I will not disclose where that place is yet, but I'm working on the third book. But there will be more snippets of New Orleans, not least of all because this book is 248 illustrations, but the total that I submitted was about 350. So there are already about 100 that we cut out. And as I said, when I walk around, all I think about are more things to draw, more things to represent. So I do have it in the back of my mind that I'll continue illustrating and perhaps there will be a part two, but
yay.
Not anytime soon.
That is good news. We've been talking with Emma Fick, whose lovely new book, A Tour of Our City in a Sketchbook, is called Snippets of New Orleans. For more information about her work, check out emmafick.com. Emma, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I love reading books. It's fun. I often read them with my mom. I like reading to explore.
can't lose. Books expand your mind, it's true. Reading books is good for you. I love reading. When I'm sitting on my bed, I go exploring in my head to Neverland with Peter Pan. Then off to Hogwarts with a bang. Meet Harry Potter on the way. You're Captain Hook, oh what a day. See mermaids in the Blue Lagoon. Dance all night by the light of the moon. Go down the rabbit hole with Alice. Meet the Queen inside her palace. To Narnia through a magic door. Listen to the lion roar. Watch Charlotte spin her spider's web. Just before she goes to bed, see Willy Wonka's factory. But don't end up like Mike TV. I love reading.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. All through July, the search to find the popular children's book character Waldo is on again at Uptown area businesses. Get a passport at Octavia Books and find Waldo in his red and white striped shirt with his dog, Woof, on vacation at businesses like Toast, Angelique, Dad Dog, Hanson Snowblitz, The Magic Box, Britannia Theater, and Scriptura, and many others. Get your passport stamped, and the search ends with a party with prizes Sunday, July 30th at 2 at Octavia Books. Delia Tomino Nakayama presents a free poetry workshop, Poetry in the Park, Thursday, July 6th, Tuesday, July 11th, Saturday, July 15th, Monday, July 17th, and Wednesday, July 19th from 2 to 5 in Audubon Park. To register, email poetryprocess@gmail.com. Lou Schumann discusses 15 Days of Hell, One Man's Battle for Peleliu, at the monthly meeting of the World War II Discussion Group, Thursday, July 6th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Melissa Daggett discusses her new book, Spiritualism in 19th Century New Orleans, Thursday, July 6th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The Octavia Book Science Fiction Book Club discusses Neil Gaiman's The Ocean at the End of the Lane, Saturday, July 8th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. Today's guest, Bill Lofilm, discusses and signs The Devil's Muse, his new Maureen Coughlan novel, Tuesday, July 11th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Young adult author Sarah Milnowski, author of I See London, I See France, Jody Lynn Anderson, author of Midnight at the Electric, Adele Griffin, author of Be True to Me, and Morgan Matson, author of The Unexpected Everything, discuss and sign their work Tuesday, July 11th at 6 at Octavia Books. Gwendolyn Tompkins discusses Danny Barker's A Life in Jazz, Tuesday, July 11th at 6:30 at Algiers Regional Library. Memoirist Roxane Gay, whose new book is Hunger, is coming to Octavia Books July 12th at 7 for a reading and interview with Maurice Ruffin. The event has had a change of venue from Octavia Books to the Uptown Jewish Community Center, but more tickets are now available at Octavia Books. Coming up in early fall, the Diana Pinkley Prizes for Crime Fiction will be presented Friday, September 8th at 6 at the NIMS Fine Arts Center at the Academy of Sacred Heart, 4301 St. Charles Avenue. The winner for Distinguished Body of Work is Canadian novelist Louise Penny, and the winner for Debut Novel is Trudy Nan Boyce of Atlanta for Out of the Blues. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at Octavia Books or octaviabooks.com and will be exchanged for a copy of Louise Penny's new book, Glass Houses, at the event. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.